I'm Rick Sanchez. I've been doing news now for some 30 years, two languages all over the world and here in the United States. I've interviewed some four U.S. presidents and worked at about four or five different U.S. television networks. Been fired by most, by the way. I believe news should be honest and direct and impactful. And this is Direct Impact. So I've noticed that lately even CNN is admitting that the situation for Ukraine and its counteroffensive is, quote, increasingly sobering.
When Ukrainian troops managed early on to roll back a good deal of that invasion force, hopes were initially high they could quickly finish the job. It's not worked out that way, and now new reporting tonight that there's growing concern among Western allies about Ukraine's counteroffensive and its fate. In a moment, we'll talk to a retired three-star general for his take, but first, the exclusive reporting from CNN's Jim Shudu.
Look, it's right there on the screen. You see the words? Increasingly sobering. Now, if CNN is saying that the counteroffensive is increasingly sobering, then it must really be increasingly sobering, or maybe even worse. Why? Well, because CNN, and you probably have noticed, is and has been among the Ukrainian government's biggest cheerleaders. I mean, if they say it ain't going well, pardon the ain't, then it must truly not be going well. And then there's this. They recently did a poll there at CNN, my old colleagues, which says that for the very first time ever, a majority of Americans are now against continuing to send billions and billions of dollars to Ukraine. In fact, as Americans watch the death toll grow from like the fires in Hawaii recently, many are asking, why is it taking the Biden administration so long to send so little to those Americans while we send so much by way of relief to Ukrainians? Since when does the need to send money to Ukrainians rank above the need to send relief funds to Americans? And look, that's the reality. No matter what position you're on, that's what Americans are asking themselves these days. And ask yourself why this is happening. Now, how about the money we do send to Ukraine? Because I think this is an important part of this, which, by the way, is a lot. How is it accounted for? Let's start with just some basic numbers. Congress approved some $113 billion in aid to Ukraine last year. And though it's a hard number to kind of nail down because you get different figures, some analysts are even saying the real figure is closer to $137 billion. That's a lot of money. Because of the enormity of those numbers, a watchdog organization that tracked the money that we spent in Afghanistan has now come forward, and they are recommending to Congress that we audit those funds so what happened in Afghanistan doesn't happen again. By the way, what happened in Afghanistan? You probably know this, maybe you don't. $19 billion. $19 billion was lost to waste, fraud, abuse. Who knows? Just poof, disappeared into thin air. $19 billion. That's your money. Now, based on that, you would think that Congress would want to make sure that the money that we send is audited, right? Nope. Democrats right now in Congress are actually saying it's okay. We don't need to audit the money to Ukraine. If it is $137 billion, you're saying $137 billion does not need to be audited? Now, if you're asking, are they actually turning down the oversight of the funds? Are they really doing that after what we saw happen in Afghanistan and in Iraq and in other countries? Yep, yep, that's exactly what they seem to be doing. It seems crazy, no? As a taxpayer, anyway. So here's where we are. We have Americans for the first time souring on their tax dollars going to Ukraine. We have the U.S. corporate media for the first time starting to recognize that Zelensky's government may not actually be telling us the truth when they say they're crushing the Russian military. And it sounds like it might be the right time for Congress, maybe the Biden administration, maybe some of these neocons, to at the very least just take a step back, right? Take a step back and reassess the theater, reassess the situation. Wrong again. In fact, neocons like John Bolton, President Trump's national security advisor, who now is among his biggest critics, is warning Americans not to elect Trump again because he will quit NATO. Those are his words, proving once again that NATO is to neocons what squirrels are to dogs. They're obsessed by it. Mitt Romney, here's another example. Despite long-standing treaties that would prevent this from happening, the senator from Utah recently said that he wants a more aggressive new U.S. strategy in the Black Sea. The former presidential candidate is seeming to suggest that we should send U.S. naval ships into the Black Sea right now to try and regulate traffic and patrol the region. A lot of observers who've heard that are saying that would be akin to Russia sending warships up the St. Lawrence River through New York all the way up to Lake Michigan to regulate shipping lanes in Lake Michigan. How would that go over? Exactly. So maybe the takeaway is this. While most Americans and even the U.S. corporate media are beginning to recognize that we should work toward a cogent, maybe more peaceful resolution to end the conflict, Democrats and Republicans, as usual, both woefully uninformed and downright war-hungry, it seems. Is it because of all the money that they get from war profiteers, weapons manufacturers, the lobbyists who shell it out? I don't know. Let's talk about this, though. Joining me now, right here in the studio, we have Michael Maloof, a former Pentagon official, as well as Garland Nixon, who is a co-host of Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik. All right. Thanks, guys. So glad you're here. I guess we got to start with, if we have spent, Mr. Maloof, $137 million, $137 billion in Ukraine, and people are actually saying we don't need to audit it. We trust our government. How crazy does that sound?
Oh, it's obnoxious and it's foolhardy, and there are calls actually in the Congress. The House has passed legislation to the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Bill, to do just that, to set up an office within the Inspector General, to do basically what the Inspector General for Afghanistan did. For Afghanistan.
Even if you're in favor that we need to give tons of money to Ukraine to do whatever the hell that is that they want to do with it, you still should be auditing it, right?
Well, especially if you compare it to Afghanistan, to what happened in Afghanistan. We see the extremely high numbers of fraudulent operations that took, economic operations that took there. We saw all of the weapons that were left behind, and basically it was an ATM machine for the military-industrial complex for years.
Okay,
so,
but
yes,
stop.
It should.
But stop. You're talking about Afghanistan, and in this case, we're talking about Ukraine, who has a democratic form of government, a very honorable and respected leadership, including Mr. Zelensky, and there's no way in the world that there would be any corruption there. Right?
Well, the reason I compared it is because it was a money laundering operation, and this is a money laundering operation. It's the same thing. You know, Cy Hirsch reported that the CIA chief went to Zelensky and basically said, you know, you stole $400 million. You took more than your fair share. Share it with some of the other people. They understand what's going on here. They can't do an audit because they already know the level of criminality that's going on here.
Do you think that's really what they, you think they know? If we were to do an audit, they're going to find out that these guys are taking the money. Zelensky recently fired, I don't know, but a good batch of people in his government, and he said the reason I'm firing them is because they're all corrupt.
Well, they complained because he wasn't sharing. That money that he was distributing.
You're saying the people he fired were actually a part of the deal?
They were all part of the deal, and he kept much of it for himself. The problem here is that we have a Democrat side in the House and the Senate that feel that it would send the wrong signal to the allies if we started to audit, number one. And number two, it would send a message to Moscow that we were not serious. But here's the problem. When the NDAA comes up in the Senate, in the House, for a conference committee, that's where you're going to see the brouhaha. It's attached to the defense authorization bill.
We're talking to Michael Maloof. He's a former Pentagon official, and also Garland Nixon, the host of the Critical Hour on Sputnik Radio. I guess the question I need to add you gentlemen deal with is, why are we getting such a weird story from the corporate media that says some of the following things? The Russian military is incompetent. By the way, these are the people who destroyed Hitler's Nazi military. The Ukraine is a democracy. Putin is Hitler, who's trying to take over the world. And the Ukrainians, by far, are winning this whole thing. Which of those things is true or not true?
None of them is true. And it's the Biden administration that is controlling the mass media in this country and saying what they want him to say.
But if it's a neocon, Michael, I'll disagree with you. If it's the neocons who are controlling the message, I really don't think it has that much to do with
Victoria,
Biden.
Victoria Nuland.
No matter who you put in there, they're going to get the same message.
Victoria Nuland. She's the deputy, acting deputy secretary of state now. She has family that came from Ukraine. Why is she anti-Russian?
How are those people different from the people in the Bush administration who got us into a couple of wars?
Well,
are they?
Well, they had other designs. No, the neocons will look for any war to push democracy.
But that's my point that I'm making to you, and I'll bring you into this, Garland. Take Biden out of the way. Take the Democrats out of the way. Put in a different president. Does anything really change?
Absolutely not. And I agree with you, because what we're talking about is an ideology. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about Joe Biden. In fact, there are many, me being one, who believe that Joe Biden isn't making decisions now, that Joe Biden is not competent to make decisions now. Mm-hmm. So he is a president. He is theoretically presiding over this ideology. And as you said, if Joe Biden's gone tomorrow, they could put a picture of Joe Biden. They could put a cardboard cutout of Joe Biden and do the same thing.
But by the way, let me argue with you on this.
That's kind of what they have now.
I don't care if he's incompetent or not competent, or if he can speak, or if his brain still works. Even before all of that, he's always been a Cold War guy. He's
right.
A war guy, right?
Yes.
I wouldn't think that even if he was well, that he would be doing anything different.
Exactly. All you have to do is look at the people around him. They are neocons. And what we know about the neocons, they've been consistent. Victoria Nuland was Dick Cheney's assistant.
To your point.
She was Hillary Clinton's assistant under Barack Obama. She missed a little bit of time under Trump, and she's back. So this is an ideological strain that has come to power, and they are doing what they do.
So, look, here's what I want to do. I want to talk a little bit more about what can possibly happen moving forward, and maybe a better understanding of what's actually happening in the theater from you, Michael, as a military guy, to help us understand that. All right, you guys stay right there. By the way, I want to continue this conversation with you as well. All you got to do is reach to me on Twitter. The handle is Rick Sanchez TV. That's Rick Sanchez TV, and we can have a conversation like the one we're having here, and I'll look for you there. By the way, when we come back, will the money for Ukraine ever dry up, or are we being led into a hot war with Europe? More when we come back. Don't go away.
In 1898, the island of Puerto Rico became a U.S. colony, but still retained its own cultural identity.
You couldn't speak in favor of independence or you'd be thrown into prison.
Today, close to half its population live in poverty. Moreover, residents of Puerto Rico have no representation in Congress and can't vote in U.S. presidential elections.
You know, they're like, okay, we're going to make you American citizens, which you didn't ask for. Even if we were offered the citizenship of heaven, we would prefer our own.
When Juan Segarra was in his 20s, he chose to fight for his homeland's independence.
We felt that we could generate more of a spirit of resistance rather than of submissive acceptance of a reality that we felt was like shockingly unfair.
Am I sorry that I decided to fight for my country? No, I'm not. Could I have done things differently? Yes, absolutely. Do I now think that violence is not the means to achieve anything? Absolutely.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. What we're talking about is how Congress, our Congress, just doesn't seem to be able to whip up enough support here in the United States for its members to audit the U.S. taxpayer dollars, just a few of them, that are going over to Ukraine. And we're joined once again by our panel, Michael Maloof, former Pentagon official, as well as Garland Nixon, who is the co-host of the Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik. My thanks again to both of you gentlemen for being here. Did either of you guys get a chance to watch the GOP debate?
Yes.
I have never seen more people trying to outdo each other to try and seem tough, like they're going to take on the world and we got to end China and we're going to take off, you know, and Russia. It just seems like they're living in the 1950s or something. Is it me or are they crazy?
What I saw was a bunch of canned talking points. When I watch that and I watch Trump or I watch Joe Rogan, you see why everyone is leaving corporate media. You see an honest conversation. Whether you agree with it or not, it seems like Tucker Carlson and Donald Trump were thinking about what they were saying and answering. These people, these were tried and tested talking points from their particular parties. I can make the government smaller than you. Oh, I can drill more than you. People have had enough of that. They can't pay their rent. Their house has been burnt down.
Who do you think? And I'm glad you made this point. Who do you think, Michael, the American people trust the least these days? The members of the corporate media or the member of the House and Senate?
Well, it sounds like both. This is what we're seeing. The American people know better now. They've seen it with their own eyes. We've lived through 20 some odd years of war, and yet we're going to be going to war again, and nothing seems to change. And just during this administration alone, things have gotten worse.
Here's as an American, what I want to know: if tomorrow President Biden called President Putin and called President Zelensky, and maybe involved President Xi, and maybe involved Modi or a couple of other world leaders, and they said, guys, we got to figure this out. Let's try and figure out how we can come to some kind of truce or some kind of arrangement here with this Ukraine situation. Has anybody even tried to do that? Do we care to do that?
It's not in our interest.
Say that again.
It's not in the U.S.
So peace is not in our interest.
That's correct. And why did we?
It's a hell of a thing to say, you know.
Why did we expand NATO the way we did, when the Warsaw Pact went away, after the fall of the Soviet Union?
So you're saying that report that said that the former prime minister of Great Britain went over there and literally told Zelensky, "Do not agree to anything. We don't want this thing to stop." That's probably true.
And he probably did. Yes. I would say he did.
What do you think of that?
Oh, let's not forget, it was the Ukrainians that reported that. So,
That's correct.
There are not a lot of things I believe out of Ukrainian media, but that one seems to make a lot of sense. And it's simply because the U.S. planned this. I mean, all you have to do is look at the Grand Chessboard, Zbigniew Brzezinski's book. For years, the U.S. has telegraphed that all they wanted was to get in Ukraine and to sharpen Ukraine up like a knife and to cut Russia's throat with it. And they've gotten what they want, Rick, but be careful what you pray for. You might just get it.
Rick, it was Victoria Nuland and then Vice President Biden who arranged for the coup in 2014 of Ukraine. Why? Because they wanted to begin an isolation of Russia. This is all aimed at containing Russia and now China. And now you hear the head of NATO, Stoltenberg, who's saying, we need now to expand NATO into the Indo-Pacific. And people are objecting. Why are we doing this? Why do we have this kind of expansion, military expansion?
But the reality of the situation on the ground, not if you listen to CNN and, you know, NBC and Fox and all the corporate media or the newspapers here in this country, but if you really are a keen observer and you start doing your homework on this, is that, in fact, the Ukrainian military is being decimated.
Yes.
This is what I'm reading in certain places. Is it true?
Yes, it is.
And they're, that they're running out of soldiers?
Yeah, they're running out of soldiers. In fact, I saw a clip this morning where authorities in Ukraine are actually virtually kidnapping young men to be
in other words, they're trying to take people off the streets and get them to fight because they need to. Yeah, I've seen some of those videos as well.
That's happening.
We've confirmed a few of them. Okay, so let's make this argument, right, Garland? Play along with me here. Ukraine is in a tough spot. It really is running out of reinforcements while it's trying to tell the world that it's having success in this counteroffensive. What happens when you run out of your soldiers? Who's going to fight?
Collapse. That's the way this thing ends. It's going to eventually collapse. Eventually, there will be some kind of a coup against Zelensky. There will be some kind of a collapse militarily and politically because there is no space for this puppet government. They're just puppets of the neocons to come back to reality and to discuss with Russia the issues. Not to mention, they've had a number of agreements with Russia, the Minsk Accords, Minsk 1, mm-hmm. Minsk 2, et cetera. Russia's not going to believe them again. That's right. So they're just going to fight and they're going to eventually collapse.
Okay, you say collapse. Let me give you another alternative. They run out of boots on the ground. Somebody else furnishes those boots on the ground. Some would even argue maybe the United States of America, my country, is going to furnish those boots on the ground. Maybe Poland, maybe NATO. Is it possible? It worries me.
I'll say this. We would if we could, but we can't, so we won't. We actually don't have the troops. We're being demilitarized along with Ukraine.
What does that mean?
That means that we don't have the numbers of troops in the area. It would take the United States a couple of years to get the number of troops in that theater to effectively engage Russia on the ground, and we don't have the ability to do that.
Do you think, that is my opinion. Do you think there's a political sense or movement or even need to do that? Are there people in this country, your friends at the Pentagon who are neocons, maybe a little crazier than you, pardon me for saying that, by the way, but who would actually say, no, we need to get our guys in there to fight those Russians?
No, I don't think. That's not the flavor of things.
Even the crazies won't say that?
No. Okay. Not the current Pentagon. Back then, maybe.
Yeah.
When we were really strong. But our stockpiles are depleted. And we don't have control over a lot of the resources that would take to build up. We would have to change our
entire
economy.
Wouldn't that be World War III? I mean,
yes,
I know we're talking crazy talk here.
It would be
World War III.
Yeah, so I envision a country like Poland. Poland has been very assertive over there. They're the ones who are buying new military equipment, whether it's from us, from Japan, and they are using NATO ultimately to regain portions of West Ukraine that they historically occupied at one time. And as well as Belarus. So I'm seeing we're basically going to be confronted with getting into one of their 18th century wars in the 21st century. And I think.
But let's get back to what we're talking about here, because Michael, this is what worries me. The theater right now is Russia against Ukraine, right?
Yeah.
My concern is the theater expands into the Russians, the Ukrainians, and somebody else. And who potentially could be that somebody else? And how worrisome would that be?
I would say the first next in line in the cannon fodder line is Poland. The problem is Poland, they can field maybe 150,000 troops. Mm-hmm. Russia's sitting with several hundred thousand troops on the side. Poland does not have the military might to engage the Russian army. The Russian army is pretty powerful. They are not using everything they have.
But gentlemen, if that happens and Polish soldiers go in, Poland is a part of NATO, correct?
Yeah.
Isn't there an agreement that says if the Russians then attack Polish soldiers, then the whole of NATO has to go in and attack Russia?
Article 5 doesn't apply.
Huh?
If they go into Ukraine and they fight in Ukraine, Article 5 wouldn't apply.
That's correct.
Would not apply.
That's correct.
Okay.
There's a distinction there, and you're absolutely correct. If they do a bilateral thing without approval of NATO, it's Article 5.
Is there political, and we'll leave this because we don't want to turn this into a segment about Poland, but do you believe there's a political will in Poland from both the people and the politicians to do something like this?
Maybe the politicians, but not the people. Even Europe. Listen to Europe. Listen to Germany. Listen to France. They're sick of it. Mm. In fact, their economies are wrecked. It's going to take a decade or two for them to regain their quality of living that they had prior to all this. And wait till this winter. This winter's going to be bad.
Why are the Ukrainians, if it's true, as we've seen in more credible reports around the world, that Ukrainians are not necessarily tearing it up over there, or at least their military isn't? Why is that? Why haven't they fared well with all the incredible, I mean, $137 billion worth of equipment?
Well, but I mean, let's face it, you know, if you've read any history about the Russian army, you look at what happened with France attacked them and Hitler attacked them. The history says that if you attack Russia, they end up in your capital. So to put the Ukrainian, which is the strongest proxy army that the U.S. has ever had, but it's still a proxy army, it doesn't have an effective air force, and it's not a legitimate military match for the Russian army, and it never has been.
It sounds like you're saying we expected too much of them.
Well, no. What we expected was for them to engage Russia. We could then use economic coercion to take Russia out. When Michael, that didn't happen, we didn't have another answer.
Michael, I'll give you the last word on this. I think we're down to 30 seconds.
Yeah, they've always been trained for defensive fighting, not offensive. And that's why all of their doctrine has been geared toward defensive. And that's why the Russians have a history of being able to counter that. They have an effective counteroffensive, and that's what I see happening.
I'm hearing they got weeks to train some of these people.
I know, it's
Can
terrible.
Can you train somebody in a couple of weeks?
Not effectively.
Care how long you train somebody. You can't train someone to run through a minefield. There's no way to get through that.
Garland Nixon, Michael Maloof, thanks to both.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So before we go, I want to remind you of our mission here, which is really simple, and I think you get a sense of it from this conversation. Want to de-silo the world, right? We've got to stop living in these little boxes where you only know your truth and maybe not your neighbor's truth. Truths don't live in boxes. They're everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to provide some, well, direct impact.